Government Operations Elections Policy Committee to order. Can I have a motion on the minutes from April 14th?
Motion.
Representative Albright moves the minutes from April 14th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Representative Nash, welcome to the committee, your committee. So we'll go ahead and let you make a motion on your bill. And then sounds like both the amendments are author's amendments, so can offer those at your pace as well.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I'd like to move House File 1971 for possible inclusion. Or what? Refer to rules. Sorry. So I'd like to move that that bill.
Representative Nash moves House File 1971 to the Committee on Rules. To your bill.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to also move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape that I'd like.
Okay, Representative Nash offers the A1. Any discussion to put the bill in the shape the author wishes? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion prevails.
Chair, I'd also like to move the A2 to put the bill in the shape that I'd like.
Representative Nash moves the A2. It's an author's amendment. All in favor of the A2, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Nash, to your bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. So for Metro members and for anyone that was watching the news in the last year, we've seen that the Met Council had a little plan called the Thrive MSP 2040 plan. And when I served as mayor in Waconia, it was a very hot topic of conversation for quite a few months, and I'm not the only former mayor, that has talked about it as being something that the words out of touch, overreaching, and poorly constructed were often used. The Thrive MSP 2040 plan is essentially leading us up to the next decennial required for the comprehensive plan adjustment. There were several studies that were done on projected growth and the implications of the growth and so on for municipalities. Speaking for myself, when I was in Waconia, we pushed back heavily on the plan. We were shown to not be growing at the rate that actual happenstance was going on the ground. Other cities in my district, and just as recently as Tuesday when I was out visiting with the city council in Watertown, Thrive MSP is still off the mark, and it is still causing problems for people. It is still causing problems for long-term growth patterns, for housing issues. And what this bill does is allows for municipalities to have a voice and the legislature to have a voice in how this plan is adopted and is it moved forward. Cities very often were unable to get the Met Council to sit down and listen. When we did, we were told, and this speaks to the efficacy of the plan, that if we didn't like the numbers, they could pencil whip the numbers, and I've said here numerous times, so I won't say it again, but if the plan was not working and it needed to be pencil whipped, we needed to have a little more oversight on that, and the cities that were affected needed to have a voice. So the bill as amended allows for both the legislature and municipalities to have a voice before that plan is adopted. So with that, my colleague and friend, Representative Vogel, is here to add some technical assistance on the part that we've amended as the A2, but I'd stand for questions, members.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Why don't I check first and see if there is anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on the bill. If you could, just go ahead and start making your way down. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you would, just introduce yourself for the record, let us know who you represent, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wes Koister. I'm the Deputy Regional Administrator from the Metropolitan Council.
Could you spell your last name briefly?
Yes, sir. K-O-O-I-S-T-R-A.
Thank you, sir.
I'm here to testify in opposition to the bill. I want the committee to know that we have a lot of requirements in statute currently to consult with local governments. We think that the requirement for the 50% approval of counties and cities is redundant to those requirements. We're required to consult with local governments, counties, park implementing agencies, and Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission in developing our plans. statute also requires that the transportation policy plan be done in coordination with the county, city's transportation advisory board, the MAC, and MnDOT. And I want the committee to know that we take those consultation requirements seriously. In the development of Thrive, we had over 200 meetings, that most of which involved local governments. We heard from 2,000 participants testifying and providing input on behalf of their communities. We also think that the requirement is the approval requirements are prohibitive to the point that it prevents us from meeting our other statutory obligations. The policy plan system statements must be available 3 years prior to the comprehensive plan updates. Local comprehensive plan updates must be in place by 2018. So we're scheduled to get our system statements out to the local governments in 2015 to meet the three-year deadline of advance notice. Under this legislation, it appears that we would have to go to the counties and cities for approval, and then we'd have to come to the legislature, which would not then be possible until the 2016 legislative session, putting us to the end of the session in 16 before we could get those out, and that would put us more in the neighborhood of 2 years prior to the comprehensive plan requirements rather than 3 years. That's a technical issue that we need to get resolved. The other probably more important issue is that it would delay the distribution of federal, state, and local funds to local governments who have an interest in those funds. It would delay the delay in the housing policy plan and the affordable and life cycle goals. Housing goals would cause a delay in the distribution of livable community funds to local cities and municipalities that rely on those funds for the development of certain properties, including the distribution of TIBRA funds, which are used for site cleanup and tax-based revitalization. It also would delay parks funding that require parks policy plan to be in place prior to requesting state and federal parks and trails funds and distributing those funds, and we also as a council match many of those funds that go out to the local parks. And probably even more significantly, it would delay federal transportation funding that requires the federal government requires that a federal transportation policy plan be in place as a basis for the distribution of those funds. And I might point out to this committee that more than half of those funds are used for highway-focused projects, and then the remaining amount of those funds is used for certainly transit interests that include replenishing buses that have aged, and used for parks and used for trails and bike trails and pedestrian infrastructure. And so under these requirements, there would be significant delays in all the distribution of all those funds. And then just finally, I would say that we know that there are times when the local governments disagree with some of the policies or some of the population estimates that we have in place. With respect to population estimates, there's already law in place that allows for challenges to those estimates. I would say that the council has been very responsive to when we receive those challenges. We work closely with local governments. It's not always perfect the first time, but like with anything, it requires a dialogue that we take seriously, and we take those concerns seriously. And I'm not sure that these sorts of delays would be supported by cities and local governments. We're not sure what problem is being solved. We think most of the issues that we have with respect to local planning and council systems plans are worked out with local governments in a fair and reasonably prompt fashion. So, excuse me, Mr. Chair, I'll end it with that. We don't think the solution is for now for the legislature to reach into the local planning process. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Koistra. Any member questions for Mr. Koistra? Representative Scott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of years ago, I just want to give an example of how I don't think that the Met Council is responsive or does work together with local units of government. A couple of years ago, there was an issue along Highway 10. Highway 10 has been in the transportation policy plan for years and years to be turned into a freeway. And single-handedly, out of the blue one day, officials from Anoka County got a letter in the mail signed by a staff member at the Met Council saying that it had been removed from the TPP. No discussion, no prior warning that this was a consideration. And so how would you say that that was working with local governments?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, I don't know the particulars of that situation. I have some recollection that there were some issues that, that were eventually worked out in that regard. So I can't speak to the particulars of that. I can speak to the fact that when we receive concerns from local governments, we're trying to be very responsive to that. I think Chair Dunnick's first 2 months have been spent going out to counties and local municipalities and hearing concerns and being a listener. And I think that that's a really important part of our role that we take seriously. And it's one that, that I think the recent actions have demonstrated that, that we do take that seriously. I can't speak to something that happened 2 years ago. And frankly, it's because I don't have the details of that situation or understand all the factors that were involved in the situation you describe. I respect the fact that you articulated it as something that that you were not happy with as in the way that it was communicated and its results. But I think beyond that, I think by and large we're very responsible to local government issues.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you asked what problem these bills would be solving, and this is the kind of problem that I just mentioned that would be solved by this, because before a staff member could take off a major highway that's very dangerous from being on the TPP, which it had been for years, rather than having a staff member from the Met Council single-handedly take that off of the TPP, in this case, they would have to, before that could be done, they would have to go to local units of government and get those local units of government that are, would be affected by that would have to get their approval. And this is the kind of thing, this isn't an isolated case. And this is why you've heard so much about the Met Council this year and the problems with the Met Council, is because they're doing these sorts of things. They're not having dialogues with local units of government. They're telling them what they can and cannot do. And as a local control person, I don't like the fact that we're trying to bring this back under the legislature and say, yeah, we're going to have the legislature look at this. But because of the track record of the Met Council, we're left with no other really alternative or choice. So there's a very heightened level of frustration right now with the Met Council. And I'm sure you're getting that idea from the number of hearings and so forth that we've had down here. And I know you're not, you know, the sole person, but you're here today. So I think this bill is a great idea, and I'm going to be supporting it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other member questions for Mr. Koistra? Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koistra, you cited that there would be, to put this into action, this proposal would delay a lot of federal funds. And could you cite, I mean, maybe take this last full year, 2014, what percent of the Met Council's expenditures are through federal funding?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, give me a little room to give you estimates because I had a little bit of this conversation yesterday with staff. I think that I was told that, for example, with the transportation fund, there's about a quarter of a billion of transportation funds that get distributed through the authority of the transportation policy plan each year, and that's what I was referencing, that more than half of those funds were highway committed funds, some of them going to MnDOT, some of them going to other local projects or to local projects through MnDOT, and then of course there's other transportation funds and so forth. There's also, I don't have a specific amount, and I would like to get back to you on this because I want to give you good information. There's also local parks seek out federal grants that go through the process of the parks policy process. I would also add, with respect to parks, sometimes there are acquisition opportunities that require us to be fairly agile with amendments to the plan to account for and to get funding for, and this would be difficult for that. I think that the general issue I'm trying to raise to you, that there are a lot of funds that flow through the agency that are based upon current systems and policy plans, and having and adding it's just a practical matter that adding formal authorization by 50% of the counties and cities prior to a formal legislative authorization, I think can reasonably it's reasonable to say it probably adds a year to what would otherwise be the timing of the distribution of those funds. And I will say again that I think that by and large, the issues between the council and the local governments with respect to parks, with respect to housing goals, with respect to population estimates, are worked out locally. I just don't believe it requires another intervention from a statewide body to deal with regional and local planning. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to have an opportunity to get you more exact figures because I don't want to misspeak.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would have a follow-up, and I would appreciate, the full picture on federal funding, because I'm trying to get at, in the just what of the plans you're putting into place are federally driven, for example, in housing. I mean, I don't know if there's what kind of federal housing money, but be helpful to know if this is more of a federal vision that we're trying to follow or what.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I will get back to Representative Runbeck. The housing piece is primarily local funds. It's the delay in the housing policy plans and the affordable life cycle goals really affects the distribution of livable community funds and the tax-based revitalization account funds for site cleanup. I think that's in the neighborhood of $10 to $15 million a year. The parks funding is affected. There are some, as I understand it, and I'm not the expert in parks funding, there are some federal grants that are sought and received that this is contingent upon the parks policy plan. There are also state appropriations for supporting parks that go through that are distributed through that via those systems plans. And then we match, I believe, 2-to-1, some of the state funding that goes to parks, so that those matches would be affected. But the greatest number is found in the transportation policy and the federal transportation funds.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koistra.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I guess I have a few questions, and the first one is: you mentioned in your opening remarks that you did not feel that additional local involvement was necessary in order for the goals to be moved forward. And I'm curious as to what your response would be in light of conversations last fall that a number of the Outer Ring counties brought to your attention. Much to the behest of the council, they must not have listened, because now I understand that there's been a federal lobby involvement. And I'm wondering if you'd just speak to that.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ulrich. First of all, I want to clarify that I'm not suggesting that more local input is not always good. I'm suggesting that we have lots of provisions that require local input. And in fact, we're having conversations now about how we can make our outreach more effective and make sure that we reach voices that we don't always reach. I mean, we do have ongoing dialogue with local communities, local jurisdictions, counties, and et cetera, but there's also portions of communities that our outreach efforts haven't been as effective as we'd like to do at reaching, and we're working very hard to look at what the best practices are to improve those efforts. We think more input is better. We think dialogue is better. With respect to the five-county issue, I will say this, that those dialogues with those counties are still ongoing. I know Chair Dunnick met with them again recently, and they were, as I understood it, productive discussions and good discussions. I will say that those five counties certainly represent a variety of interests. They're not all shared by all five counties, but they do have in common that they have some concerns about our plans. Some of those concerns are may or may not be shared by the rest of the region. And that's always the challenge that you have as a state legislature, to develop policy that is good for the whole state, and it's not always agreed to by every single entity within the state. We have that same challenge at the council, in that we're mandated by the legislature to look regionally, and we're mandated to guide the efficient and economical development of the region. That is not always equal to the sum of its parts. It can't be, because there are differing opinions across the region. And so what our challenge is to find what's the balance of those opinions. But so with respect, again, to those five counties, we take seriously their concerns. We're having dialogue with those counties. We don't believe that those concerns should be resolved in Washington, and would say that again. We think they can be resolved locally. We think that the expenditures of doing that are unnecessary. But all that aside, it's important for us to continue the dialogue with them, because more often than not, you are able to come to some resolution when you keep talking, and that's what our efforts have been recently, is to keep talking.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koistra, you mentioned, and I've seen the Thrive 2040 report, and it alludes to housing, affordable living, lifestyle goals, and a myriad of additional aspirations that I think the council seeks to employ within their overall program. And I'm just wondering if you would compare and contrast that with the original charter that was mandated by the legislature to the council.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, could I hear the question again? I think I missed it. I'm sorry.
Representative Albright.
In the Thrive 2040 plan, you go after a new ground, if you will. I think we can call it for what it is, and I believe it's mission creep. Because as I would understand, the charter of Met Council was initially to provide for coordinated effort amongst the counties for management of stormwater and sewer, as well as the water supply. And now we're talking about transportation, transit, we're talking about housing, we're talking about educational lifestyle goals, we're talking about redistribution of demographic disparities, and I'm just wondering what justifies the council in taking on those requirements as it would pertain to allowing the local municipalities to decide for themselves how they want to grow.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I would differ that there's mission creep contained in the Thrive document. I think the Thrive document, in the sense there's a difference between the Thrive document raising issues that are important to the region, and I think that anybody that was looking at the demographics would say equity issues are important to this region when we see the population changes that are being projected over the next 30 years, and the change in our demographics and the disparity on many levels with people with respect to success of people with minorities, whether in a number of our systems. That doesn't mean that we have the authority to apply certain hammers in those cases, if you will. It doesn't mean that we are asserting authority that we don't have, but I think it's fair to raise those issues. I think it's also fair to raise issues of sustainability in a region that is growing and that relies on quality of life, and certainly clean air and other issues around sustainability are important to the economic development of this region. It's what quality of life is what attracts many people and businesses to this region. So what I'm asking is for the legislature to consider the difference between raising issues that might be legitimate conversations in the region, and where reasonable people can disagree, but they're conversations that need to occur, and extending authority that I don't believe we're extending authority on. I think these are important issues to raise to the region. I think the dialogue is important. Maybe even the controversy that we are currently experiencing is just part of that dialogue, because people obviously disagree. That's good. That's good to have those discussions and to sort of seek out some common ground, because they are issues that regardless of your opinion on the side of those issues, are important issues to the region.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Koester, do I take from your comments that you would affirm that the role of the Met Council is advisory only?
Mr. Koester.
Mr. Chair, that's not what I said. I think that the statute provides a fairly specific charge to the council. It has fairly specific charges in certain areas. I'm not an attorney. I can't quote the statute or tell you exactly what those charges are. I don't want to say anything in error. And I'm just saying that, to my knowledge, we've not extended our authority beyond what authority has been provided to us by this body.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't catch the beginning of your opening statement, but I'm just wondering if you could just elaborate your position on the Met Council and your background personally.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative, my name is Wes Koistra, and I work as the Deputy Regional Administrator at the Metropolitan Council.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
So, Mr. Koistra, you then would report directly to the Commissioner Dunick, then?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I report to the Regional Administrator, Patrick Bourne.
Thank you,
Representative
Mr. Chair.
Albright. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little bit of questioning about the Central Corridor. And it's up and running now. Do you see that as a success so far? Or?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, we're really happy with the results of the Central Corridor and the ridership that we're seeing, and the vitality it's given to that corridor and the businesses around that corridor. We've done a lot of work to cut down the time between the two cities to get it to where we wanted to do. I think we've accomplished getting it down to a route time frame that we were trying to achieve early on. We have some other things that we're trying to address to make it better, but I would say from a 1,000-foot level, we're really happy with the rollout of the Central Corridor.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Scott.
Thank you. And Mr. Koistra, I want to take you back to when it was being built and even since that time. There are some businesses that did not survive the building of the Central Corridor. Others were not given proper notice that electricity or water was going to be shut off. I know the restaurants, they were in the middle of a lunch or lunchtime, and they were very heavily affected by the building of the Central Corridor. So for those businesses that either went out of business or had significant losses, do you think that the ends to build the Central Corridor justify the means?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I don't think that I'm in the position to speak to about any of those businesses. I think there are probably some businesses that were hurt during the construction phase, as is the case with any major public construction project. I'm sure that's true, whether it's about a stadium or whether it's a highway or whether it's any other major public works project. No one has any pleasure in that, with the effects that it has on the short term on businesses. And certainly there's no pleasure taken with businesses that may have faltered during the time of construction. I think there are other businesses that would tell you that this has been great for that corridor, that it's been great for business, that has picked up traffic through the corridor and would consider it a tremendous success. So I would never dismiss the impacts of any major public works project on local businesses. That's something that always is a consideration and a concern when it happens, and it's always, there are always situations that cannot be avoided in that regard. Sometimes along the way, your communication should have been better than what it was before, and you have to recognize that and make corrections. But you're talking about a history now that I probably don't have the right people in the room to answer all your questions.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Final follow-up, Representative
yes.
Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I know I was reappointed to the Governance Oversight Commission for the Met Council. I was reappointed to that this year, and so I think even though that commission has zero power over you,
I would like to have some of the businesses come in that are along there and just see how well they really are doing, especially since some of them have lost significant parking and other things. So I look forward to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Pugh. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to start by thanking my colleague from Carver County, Representative Nash, for bringing this bill and for all of the hard work that you've invested in it. I look forward to hearing from Representative Vogel to shed some more light on this. Prior to the past 2 years, my first term in the state legislature, I was an active member of my Carver County community. And not only did I hear on an ongoing basis of frustration and feedback from locally elected officials, but I know a number of concerned citizens who have participated in these meetings, some of the 2,000 participants. And I acknowledge that the Metropolitan Council has held numerous meetings. I don't know that it was 200, but a lot, and that a number of people participated. But I can tell you that the citizens that I know felt that they were led to the outcomes that the Metropolitan Council wanted to achieve. And I don't believe that the elected officials and the citizens that I know feel that the Metropolitan Council has been responsive to their needs. In fact, over the course of the last month, we've had many elected officials here to speak to these concerns, and I would encourage you, if you haven't had an opportunity to listen to the audio from these meetings, you may be surprised to hear all of the specific examples. Representative Scott mentioned just a few, but what we have heard over the course of the last month in testimony is very reflective of this angst that the elected officials and citizens feel about the lack of responsiveness of the Met Council. So I would encourage you to listen to those tapes. And I think it would inform your decision. So really, I don't have a question, but I do believe that that's why this bill is here before us. As Representative Nash mentioned, right, his opening remarks about, really how out of touch the Metropolitan Council has been and the overreach. So I wanted to make those remarks.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to apologize for being late. We're here in property taxes past midnight last night. So,
better you than me.
I haven't had enough coffee to really have my brain process quick enough. I missed the movement of the amendments, and I just wanted to double check I understood what was going on. Is the A2 amendment a delete all after the enacting clause?
No. Representative Joachim, it's not.
So Section 1 of House File 1971 remains?
Correct.
Okay, so then the A1 amendment, that Section 1, that subdivision's added to the current Section 1?
Correct.
All right. So I just want to double check on that. So what I'm kind of seeing, there's three sections to the bill. Maybe this is more to the author, so I understand. And once again, I apologize for being late. We have an area that's working with development guidelines, where in the bill you want local government to be able to vote on or trump what the council Met Council sets forward. We have a population data challenges, where the same thing, we want the local government to be able to trump what the Met Council puts forward or be able to have a more thorough dialogue, it sounds like. And then we have affordable life cycle goals also for housing, right? A section, Representative Nash?
Mr. Speaker and Representative Joachim, yes. Or Mr. Chair. You get that promotion a lot. Sorry. Yes. Essentially, and while I would hesitate to use the word trump, I think that's a pretty heavy-handed word, but I'm trying to, as you know, having served on a city council, trying to give city councils a voice and a process that to date, on numerous occasions, on all parts of the seven-county metro, have been not listened to. And while Mr. Koistra has said that there have been 200 meetings, none of them were had with several cities in my district and across the state, or across the Seven County Metro. And we've heard other municipalities said that they have struggled to get heard, and this provides a mechanism for that to happen. And, you know, Mr. Koistra said that, the local voice is good, and I believe he said that more input is good, and this facilitates just that.
Representative Joaquin.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I used the word Trump because there is a line in here on 1.15 that says the law does not take into effect until it's the council has enacted or approved the plan. So while you're getting more input as a council, you're also not giving – it's a one-way street. The council, the Met Council can't come back and then say, well – let's talk about this again. I know you're frustrated. You can say we're not enacting what your development guide says. So that kind of is a trump a little bit. On the affordable life cycle goal, I was just trying to understand, too, that one, you don't have the local, you have the local input like we do now, but then you have the legislature come in and make a decision. Is that, am I reading that right? That
Representative correct. Nash.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, yes, that's correct.
Representative Joaquin.
And I was just wondering what the thought was behind that, that you thought the legislature should come in instead of the local control then.
Representative Nash.
And Mr. Chair, would invite Representative Vogel to come since we merged these to make it a little more efficient to move along, and I would invite him to come along. But essentially it's providing, you know, it's going to be a larger region. The legislature will have a hand in that, and that was part of the intent. And Representative Vogel is going to come and share a little bit more about that.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill simply says that before the housing plan can be implemented, that it has to be approved by the legislature. If the legislature doesn't approve it by or doesn't act on it by a certain date, the Met Council is then able to implement it on its own. The reason for the bill is because the local governments really have no way of exerting any final influence on how this plan is implemented. And we had the mayor from Plymouth testify in Jobs and Energy saying that they had established some affordable housing goals for Plymouth, but there isn't the land, affordable land, available for those. And if something like that should happen, all of a sudden you put local communities in a position where they can't possibly comply with what's been set in front of them, and it also can jeopardize other things, as Representative Albright had talked with the system plans and the funding and so forth. So all this does is give the legislature the opportunity to interface with the council with some authority before there could be implementation.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Vogel. So I think I'm understanding a little bit more. So the local government can ask the legislature to step in and stop it, but if the legislature chooses not to, then the Met Council can still implement it?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, this would this law would put in place that the legislature has the authority to approve it by a date certain. If they don't use that authority by that date certain, then the council is free to act as they were. So it puts in place a mechanism where local units of government could interact with their local legislators and actually have some control over the situation, rather than the hearing process where, yes, we listened, but we decided to do it anyway.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vogel, I'm trying to understand why we need this, because currently couldn't a local unit of government go to their legislators and ask for help and have something done to stop a plan or adjust it?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, Representative. They could interact, but they really have no authority, and because the Met Council at this point has the authority to adopt this plan and implement this plan. What this does is it puts the authority in an elected body, the legislature.
Representative Joaquin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, I'm sorry. I really am tired this morning, and I apologize. My stupid is showing a little bit. So you're saying that the local units of government right now could not go to their elected officials and say, we need some help, please enact a statute that changes the housing authority guidelines? Because from what I understand, the legislature could trump Met Council right now. We're kind of doing that here.
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative. Thank you. That's actually exactly what this bill is doing, is putting the authority in the hands of the legislature to approve that plan if they decide to debate it and do so. If they decide not to, the council then can implement on their own. So right now, there isn't a mechanism that would preclude the council from implementing a housing plan without legislative approval. All this does is exactly what you just talked about, was to give local units of government the ability to go to their elected representatives and then have an elected body with the authority as in the form of a law to either say yes or no to the housing plan.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Joaquimez, the floor will
just
come back to you.
To her points.
Well, Representative Joaquim can yield if she wishes, otherwise...
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, if you can explain it to me better, I'd be more than happy to.
Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I would put it and frame it as an appeals process. I mean, right now you don't have any formal way for a city to actually be heard. And yes, they say they're listening, but this guarantees that there's going to be a, you know, a referee at least, and there will be some way to appeal. And I think that's only fair, and that's a really good government idea. So call it an appeals process.
Representative Joaquim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, thank you. I think we already have that appeals process in place. I know Hopkins is going through that right now. We had some goals put forward to us on our housing and our population, our affordable housing from the council. We weren't too happy with them either. We were a little frustrated. We have a lot of affordable housing currently in Hopkins, and we are working with the Met Council, and that is an open dialogue and working. And I would hate to think that me as the representative or my fellow members of the legislature could then insert themselves into that process between my local government, who knows more than the legislature, let's say, I can't say Representative Seltzer because she shares a road with me. So Representative Mallory might not know Hopkins and St. Louis Park as well as my local government does or I do. So I really have a concern with that top-down approach because I started in local government. I really do believe in local control and that open dialogue, and I think this really goes way beyond what an appeal process does. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to this point also, it's I thought I heard Representative Vogel say that the language in the A2 amendment basically says they can't enact it until we look at it, and if we don't act, then the plan goes into effect. I think that's what I heard him say. But reading this on line 1.15 of A2, and maybe Ms. Dyson can help me with this, does not take effect until a law is enacted, which means if they come up with a plan and we don't act, the plan can't go into effect. And that's just the opposite of what I think I heard Representative Vogel say. So, Ms. Dyson, am I wrong in that? Is that how this reads? Or?
And Representative Nelson, we will certainly let Ms. Dyson go through this, but neither of you are wrong. Section 1, you are correct. Sections 2 and 3 are what apply where, in what Representative Vogel was talking about, in the actual Affordable Life Cycle Housing Opportunities Plan, which is different than the development guide. But we'll let Ms. Dyson clear the air.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, the chair is correct. Section 1 is the development guide, which is the overall policy plans, includes the plans and systems for the region, and that one does require that the legislature enact a law that gets signed by the governor before that plan would be implemented. So that's one element. Sections 2 and 3 relate specifically to the Metropolitan Livable Communities Act, and that's the voluntary program where communities decide to participate in the affordable life cycle housing goals in order to be eligible for the tax-based revitalization account funding and the livable communities demonstration account funding. And so the bill has two different elements, and the Livable Communities Act provisions do say that the goals don't apply until the legislature's approved the goals for those communities or the legislature fails to act.
Representative Nelson.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to legislation coming forward for St. Cloud and for all the other cities in the county that the state legislature has to approve all of their development plans and again do the micromanaging that's going on here. But I have a question for Mr. Koistra. And if you could come back up. Mr. Koistra, Mr. Chair, Mr. Koistra, the Thrive 2040 plan that's causing all this, it sounds to be causing all this upheaval. This is something the Met Council has to do on a regular basis, come up with a 10, 20-year plan that we're looking down the road and guess at how trends are going to happen. Is this just the latest version of that?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Thrive 2040 plan is the regional guide that is required by law that we update every 10 years. It's called, it goes by different titles, but it requires certain provisions to be addressed in the regional plan, and it's updated each decade generally it corresponds with the census.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Koistra. So how accurate was the last plan, say the last two plans, of looking forward and saying this is how we think development's going to happen, this is what we suggest? I mean, were they 100% accurate? Was there the same consternation going on among local governments that I don't want this, I don't want that, and complaints and dialogue back and forth? So how accurate was the previous plans?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I think that probably in the middle of one of those plans was the Great Recession. So if we were able to predict that in advance, we probably wouldn't be doing these jobs. We'd be doing other jobs. But I think by definition, all forecasts are forecasts. I know that when I work for other agencies in human services, where they say by definition the forecast will not be exactly right. So I think throughout the process, you do is you provide a forecast based upon the best data you have, and that's taken very seriously. We have a lot of analytics to go into the forecast. We make a population projection, and then we make revisions to that. And I think it's quite common to make revisions to that. And part of that revision process is dialogues with local governments about what they see as not being considered in the forecast for that community. And those are ongoing revisions, and I think they take place quite regularly. I do have a person here who manages the forecast process, but I'm not sure how deeply you want to get involved into that.
Well, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I got the answer I wanted. This is a forecast and a guide, just like our economic forecast that we rely on for the state, that are our best guess, and it reminds me of an old quote that says, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your future plans. And because, you know, we're getting a big uproar here about this, and I understand there's a lot of concern. I know there's been some concerns in my city about some of the housing projections and where they're saying. And I know we don't have the votes here to vote this down. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'll let it go.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Joachim.
Not Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time letting it go just because I think my brain finally woke up. After spending 9 years on the Hopkins City Council, I've gone through one of the comprehensive plan updates that we are required to do by the state. And now I'm starting to kind of understand after what Representative Nelson said that the Thrive 2040 Guide is like a city's comprehensive plan. It's a plan. A lookout, a forecast, a plan that helps you guide the policies that you're going to put to place. On the city side with a comprehensive plan, it's a plan. It guides our policies, it guides our thoughts, it guides future councils on kind of what you were thinking when you put it into place. And then as an individual council, because you can never bind the hands of another council, that individual council, as those projects come up or come before them with redevelopment or what they're going to do with streets or sidewalks or housing, they make those final votes themselves, local control. With the regional guide with the 2040, from what I'm understanding now, and correct me if I'm wrong, this helps guide the policies for the region and a lookout and what you'd like it to look like and what the best policies you think with standard practices. And that policies, those policies set forward in that guide guides the funding that could go to help local projects. So it's not saying you can't do this, you should do that. It's saying if you want us to help you with money, this is what we'd like you to do. So maybe it's kind of getting to that point of, you know, we might want the one money but not want to follow the plans. I don't know where the consternation is there when it's kind of just a guide. But, of course, nobody likes strings that comes with cash. But we all know that they do. So now I'm kind of understanding that. And I hate to have the thought of what I worry about with this, and Representative Nelson pointed it out so well, is now we're taking those strings and we're adding another tether on there that the legislature, somebody in Thief River Falls, will tell me in Hopkins also what we need to do to get that cash. So I think that's a little dangerous slippery slope to go down. Thank you.
Any other member questions or discussion?
No, Mr.
Representative Rumbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment back. Just a plan. I mean, the plan is driving enormous expenditures. It's driving land use, zoning. It is driving so much that is somewhat unseen, is an interference in the marketplace. I wouldn't call it just a benign plan. These are real. And lots of dollars are exchanged as a result or withheld, So I think it's really smart to have a referee and to know that there will be an exchange. And if you as the legislator didn't want to get involved and you thought what was happening was fine between the two entities, just be quiet. I mean, that's your choice. And if the negotiations are going well, hey, we don't have to do a thing.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to call for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
And, Mr. Chair, and members, I guess this goes back to, like I said, the planning, lack of planning also costs money. I know going back, I think the original intent of the Met Council was to deal with some regional issues. And if I remember right, the history is that there was going to be a water or a sewer treatment plant that was going to be built by one city that would have dumped into the intake for the water treatment plant for another city. And I don't think anybody wanted that to happen. I think that's what I think started the Metropolitan Council. But I think back to my city and my neighboring cities that we have a little airport, Crystal Airport, that's partly in my district, and the county few years back was looking what they wanted to know what the airport commission was going to do with that airport, because if they were going to close it down, and they're doing this as part of their planning for rehabbing Highway 81, which goes right by there, that if they're going to close this down, and we're in the process of planning how to resurface and upgrade this road, it's a whole lot different what their planning has to be if their airport's going to be there and the usage of that road, as opposed to if they sell it off and dump 1,000 new houses in that or businesses in that area, and we're going to need to increase the size of that road. And so they want a guide, and they need to have that for their planning purposes. And if we just go hamstring the Metropolitan Council, or some plans to eliminate it, now we're going to have development willy-nilly, and we're going to have roads that this road is going to go here, and all of a sudden there's development there that this city's approved, and now that road's got to stop. And we need to have this long-term planning just so we can have an orderly development of our city, and we can spend money wisely and not have to all of a sudden spend a whole lot of money on a road because somebody decided to drop 1,000 new homes in an area that now the roads all the way around it don't handle or can't handle the traffic. So, Mr. Chair, like I said, I know I don't have the votes here to kill this, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. And, you know, I think if we were talking about water and sewer as the original Met Council mission was, I think most members around this table and in this body agree that that's an appropriate mission. But when you have a plan, and it'll be great to go back and tell my city that this is just a plan and don't worry about it, but when you have something like Thrive 2040 telling the city of Blaine that they have to have X amount of affordable houses in the new future, when we lead the metro in new housing permits, when I know my mayor and my city council are up in arms over what they're being told to do in this plan. Like I said, it's good to hear that this is more just a guide and a plan. But behind Minneapolis, I think we continue to lead the metro in growth. Blaine has exploded in good growth, positive growth, and have an outside group come in and say that you need to build your city this way when it comes to housing. That is an extreme encroachment on that. And so I do think that if, again, you go back to water and sewer and keeping those things moving along, keeping cities working together and some of those regional plans, but I don't understand how telling a city like Blaine what types of houses they need to put up when we continue to have a growing population, a very good growth, how that's regional planning. I don't understand that at all. So with that, Representative Nash, we'll give you the final words.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much. I just wanted to leave this with one point, that this bill allows for cities like Waconia or Blaine or other places finally an ability to act to get some redress with teeth. When I was the mayor and I asked, well, what can we do about this plan if it's implemented? Because we had a couple of meetings after almost lighting ourselves on fire in the lobby of the Met Council to get them to come down. I was told by our city administrator and our city attorney that there really is no redress. They can execute this plan. They can implement this plan. And there is no way, short of just having a quaint dialogue and hoping that they make those changes, this bill affords that redress. And I would appreciate your yes vote.
With that, members, Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 1971 be referred to Rules as amended, and the roll will be taken.
Chair Sanders.
Aye.
Vice Chair Pugh.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Nope.
Representative Albright.
Aye.
Representative Fenton.
Aye.
Representative Halverson is excused. Representative Lane.
No.
Representative Mullery. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Runbeck.
Aye.
Representative Seltzer.
No.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
No.
That, members, there being 9 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, members. With that, we will see you back on Tuesday. We will be in room 10. That, members, we are adjourned.